This is a CBC podcast.
Hi, and welcome to The Q Interview from CBC Podcasts and from Q on CBC Radio 1. I'm Caitlin Swan. I'm the producer of this thing. And unfortunately, Tom Power, your usual host, has been stolen by pirates. So I'm filling in until we can come up with the ransom. Today's episode, you're going to hear from someone who considers themselves to be an android. I'm talking about the singer, rapper, and science fiction author, Janelle Monáe. Tom and Janelle caught up earlier this year to talk about Janelle's collection of short stories. It's called The Memory Librarian and Other Stories of Dirty Computer. Here's Tom's conversation with Janelle Monáe.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I am magnificent. Thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Are you kidding me? We're so delighted that you're here. I'm overwhelmed. Were you a science fiction fan as a kid?
Yes. Oh, yes, yes, yes. It was, you know, one of my favorite genres. Seeping into. I didn't have a family that like stopped me from reading sci-fi or watching horror or any of those things. And I think that I count that as a blessing, because the big kid that I am now never lost touch of my imagination, never lost touch of otherworldliness, and never lost touch of world building.
When you were a kid, you were able to watch like horror and sci-fi and fantasy? Like what? What do you remember watching?
Yeah. Oh, well, first of all, me and my cousins would all get together and we would watch Nightmare on Elm Street, Michael Myers, Halloween, Jason, like you name it. And I also read the R.L. Stein books, the Goosebumps books, which were so, I count that as like a big inspiration for just how my mind works today. And, you know, Star Wars, I would watch Twilight Zone with my grandmother a lot. I mean, you name it.
That's beautiful. I think we're around the same age, and I loved Goosebumps too. I've never got a chance to talk about it very much, but I love Goosebumps too.
Oh, are you timeless like me?
I feel effervescent and timeless.
Okay, because that's my age, timeless.
Yeah, I think there are days that I feel there are days I feel like I'm timeless, and there are days that I feel like I might be too. When did Afrofuturism come into your life? Afrofuturism, for folks who don't know, this, you know, very powerful genre that emerges as a way to talk about the future and the Black experience. When did that come across you?
It's so interesting. I didn't know that what I was doing was even considered Afrofuturism until I put out my first album. And then I started to kind of get these reviews that were like, oh, she's Afrofuturistic. And then I started to just do all this research. And I was like, wow, I have a whole family of authors and writers who, you know, who I need to get into. And that's really when I started to get into Octavia Butler. That's when I started to understand who Sun Ra was on the musical side. And I was like, oh, well, maybe Missy Elliott is considered Afrofuturism, or Grace Jones, because to me, Afrofuturism just is Black folks defining our futures, telling stories about us, for us, showing us thriving unapologetically. And yeah, that is, I think that was like my first initial, you know, relationship with the word, and I feel so beautiful to be spearheading this community and being a part of the community as well.
When before we turned on the microphones, you know, I said welcome, and I was telling you how pleased I was to get a chance to talk to you, and you said, you know, it's not every day you get sort of your first, you know, it's not every day you get your first kind of foray into the literary community, and you, that's right. I mean, I know you mainly as a musician and as an actor and someone in those spaces. Were you writing at all when you were a kid? Were you writing stories?
I was. This is like a full circle moment, because I remember writing a short story, you know, in middle school, elementary middle school, I want to say, about aliens and plants talking, and then they abducted my grandmother through photosynthesis. And so, yeah, I mean, I remember writing that, and then I was a part of the young Playwrights Roundtable, the Coterie Theater's Young Playwrights Roundtable in my hometown, Kansas City. And I got an opportunity to write short stories there. And then when, you know, if they were considered good enough, the local actors would come in and perform them. And I just remember also being kind of kicked out of that program because I was late. And the reason why I was late was my mother and I, we were sharing a car at the time. My mom was a janitor and I had to go and pick her up and drop her off. And, you know, when she had to stay later, I had to stay later. So it made me later for the after school program. And so to be able to have my first book out of short stories, which is a very collaborative project, and we can get into that soon, but it's a collaborative project. But to be able to have that, you know, from being kicked out of a writer's program to like having your first book be in the top 10 and for New York Times bestsellers list is, man, it's a beautiful story to never give up, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to talking about the collaboration at the heart of this book, because I think it's so important to this book, and talking a little bit about the stories behind it. But just before I get to that, I am always interested in why some kids are interested in science fiction and fantasy and others aren't. Why do you think you were drawn to science fiction and horror and all that stuff when you were a kid?
I my mom would say when I was, you know, an infant and toddler, I would sit on anyone's lap. Like, I never was afraid of people, but I always stared at people. And I consider myself to this day to be an observer. And I've always wanted to know, like, what's beyond the clouds? You know, is there really, I do a lot of thought experiments in my head. Like, is there really an alternate universe? Yeah. What don't we know? You know, I love space. That's why I was in Hidden Figures. It was obviously to honor the Black women who helped get our astronauts in America into orbit and into space. But I've always wondered I always look beyond everyday things that we would see and wanted to know, you know, I just imagined so many things in my mind, in my head. And so, yeah, I just think it's kind of a part of my DNA. You know, I am an android after all.
After all. I want to take a listen now to a clip from the emotional picture of Dirty Computer, because I think it helps establish the world you're exploring with some of these stories.
Yeah.
They started calling us computers. People began vanishing. And the cleaning began. You were dirty if you looked different. You were dirty if you refused to live the way they dictated. You were dirty if you showed any form of opposition at all. And if you were dirty, it was only a matter of time.
So I think this is a good way to start. A matter of time before what?
Before you are cleansed, before New Dawn cleanses you. I think I need to go back to the origin of how Dirty Computer.
That was my next question. I wanted to talk about that nightmare.
Yeah. It was not a dream, but a nightmare that I had. And I had this nightmare that I was in a movie theater. I don't remember what movie I was going to go see, but I had a lot of popcorn and Twizzlers and candies and things in my head. And I walked down the aisle and there was this usher who said, "Hey, you need to come with me because they're stealing people. They're snatching people." And I was like, "Ma'am, please get out of my face. I just want to sit down. I want to eat my popcorn. I want to watch this movie." And as I was going to my seat to sit down, I was abducted. I was snatched. I still remember what the popcorn looked like as it fell on the floor. I still remember seeing the people running and all of the chaos breaking out. And I just remember in this nightmare, waking up, all of my identity was swiped away. All of my memories were swiped away and I didn't know who I was. And so this word identity just kept coming up. I hopped up and I got my voice recorder and I recorded everything I could remember from that nightmare. And identity, you know, that word was just at the forefront of my brain. why would they want to erase my identity? And that is how Dirty Computer was born. I was supposed to write this album, you know, to get a more closer and in-depth look at kind of where I was as a person and as an artist. But yeah, there was just some intersection there around not just my identity being talked about, but a whole community's identities. What makes us a threat to the status quo, to this totalitarian society, this regime? And a lot of what was in that nightmare of taking identities what turned out to be very meta, because in our own country, we were dealing with the president. We were dealing with, you know, politicians. And even right now, we're still dealing with politicians who are signing bills, governors signing bills that you can't talk about the LGBTQIA plus communities in schools. You can't talk about race. You can't talk about critical race theory. That is a form of erasure. That is a form of erasing identities and saying, you don't matter. We are not going to look at how we have treated you in the past. But it is our past that informs a better future, right?
It is. Talk to me a little bit about, because when I hear that, you know, I think about community. I think about it's not just, you know, one person being affected by this, but it's community. And I've been thinking a lot about the power. I mean, this is sort of the background that I come from, the power of only community to fight back against these things. And it's within that lens that I found it really interesting that you collaborated with other authors, like a community of other authors, to write this book.
Yeah, it felt right. You know, it felt like the right thing to do. Once I released this album, there were so many people around the world, different countries, like just seeing themselves in the work, identifying as a Dirty Computer. You know, when their own church wouldn't take them in, this album, my concerts became their church. Mm. When their own families wouldn't take them in, this album, my performances, my concerts, this community became their family. And so it just felt good to mirror that energy and collaborate on the literary side with writers who I consider to be Dirty Computers as well, who cared about the same community that I cared about. And it was just incredible to be able to do that. And I'm so proud of us because we did it right at the top of the pandemic, you know, in 2020, when we were still spraying Lysol on cardboard boxes. You know, we didn't know what kind of pandemic we were. We didn't know we were even going to still be in this pandemic. We thought, oh, we have some snow days, you know, we could just stay at home and things are getting canceled. Yay. But we didn't know what we were up against.
Janelle, for people who haven't read the book, I just want to make sure they know what we're talking about here. Can you define, when you say it was a bunch of dirty computers, can you define a dirty computer for us?
Well, dirty computers are individuals who refuse to assimilate. They refuse to, you know, wipe away their queerness, wipe away their blackness. And because of that, they are a threat to the status quo. They are a threat to this totalitarian regime known as the New Dawn, who wants to curate this world where they can control and manipulate and everybody looks the same, dresses the same. So dirty computers, the moment they come out, though, they're considered dirty and they refuse. I guess the best way is to describe them is they are free ass motherfuckers.
Yeah, I think that's probably
the best way.
That's the best
right?
way. You're not wrong about that.
Yeah.
One thing these stories made me think about was not just totalitarian governments. And again, I don't want to kill the art here by going too deep into the meaning. But I thought about totalitarian governments for sure. But I also thought about tech companies. I thought about my own relationship with my phone. I thought about my own. Mm. I thought about the speaking of being an Android, the person that I am when I'm talking to my friends and the half person, half phone I am when I'm using my phone, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought about that particular. Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was listening.
I thought about that in the context of one of the stories of the memory librarian, which is, and I feel very bashful trying to describe the story to the person who wrote it, but, you know, but is about someone who is a memory keeper. A black woman is a memory keeper. When everyone else's memories have been destroyed, she has those memories, so she knows everybody's secrets. Yeah. And now she wants to fall in love.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me a little bit about where that story came from.
So with all the stories, I did this sort of thought experiment. You know, we knew that we were dealing with memories being erased, but where do they go? Who has them? And I said, what if there was this black woman who, you know, I don't want to give too much away myself, so I won't give all the details around her life, but she literally knows everybody's identities and memories before they were wiped, like a whole Dewey Decimal System of like people and files of folks' lives before they became cleansed. And what if she wants to fall in love now? What does that mean to fall in love when you know everyone's secrets? And so I thought that would be a good work because there's conflict there within itself, you know? And then some of these secrets, some of these identities lead her back to understanding who she was before she was a memory keeper. So it's a lot there. I think with that story too, it just felt like the best title for all of the short stories. And, you know, in a way, I want to encourage everybody to be their own memory librarians. Really think about the memories that you're creating. You know, memories determine the quality of our lives, good, bad, ugly, amazing, all of it. So it's like I'm encouraging you in a sense to get specific about being the author of your own memories.
More from Janelle Monáe right after this. Here's the rest of Tom Powers' conversation with Janelle Monáe.
I watched an interview recently where someone was talking about how memory and mental archiving is different for people who are over 40 and different for people who are under 40. And they were making the argument that those who are under 40, they have their memories affected, by virtue that they are using tech in this way, by virtue that they're archiving their lives as the day goes on through Instagram, through Snapchat, through tech.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think about, you know, again, as I said to you earlier, am I all human or am I part human and part machine when I'm using the computer this much? How much of that crossed your mind in this?
Well, I'm an Android, so I'm half human, half computer.
Yeah.
You know, that
yeah.
is literally how I feel in my body.
Yeah.
And I mean, since I've come out as an artist, you know, all of my work has been centered around this concept of how do we coexist? I read Ray Kurzweil's The Singularity is Near. And we talk, you know, in that there's a lot of talk about technology moving at an exponential rate. And I mean, just when you have your phone in your hand, like that is very cyborgish, just looking like it is an extension of your arm when you have it in your hand,
yeah.
just the physical, like looking at it.
Yeah.
You know, it might not look how it looks in, you know, Total Recall or in some of these sci-fi movies,
yeah.
but it is literally technology attached to your human arm.
yeah.
So if you think about it in that way, it does put a lot in perspective. And I just think everything is about balance. You know, life is about balance. Work hard, play hard, right? You have to understand how to ebb and flow with technology. You know, too much of anything, in my opinion, can be, you know, too much. I mean, when I'm with my head down for so long looking on my phone, I'm missing the present. I'm missing moments right around me. My whole life it can go by. You know, I think you also have to look at racial bias when we're talking about tech. I mean, there's so much to be talked about in this space, from androids to cyborgs to, you know, what is a more healthy way and practice of using technology, and how beautiful it is to form community in these tech worlds.
I think I'm always in those moments looking for an answer. But one thing that your art keeps bringing me back to whenever I engage with it is the middle, is the word you used over and over again there, that, with balance. And, you know, and I see that through your own work and your own presentation so much, you know, the ability to not just be between, as you mentioned, you know, what society insists is human and non-human, the polarities society insists on of rich and poor, the polarities society insists on in terms of gender. Like, what does that how do I say this now? What does that betweenness give you when it comes to understanding this seemingly polarized world we're living in?
You know, I don't have the answers.
Yeah.
Right. I don't. I pose questions a lot of times, you know, as I evolve and I grow and I read and I talk to different people and get a more like personal understanding from having gone through my own experiences. I gather new information and I might change my mind about what I thought, or I'm like, no, that's still what it is. And I think when I watched Metropolis, the Fritz Lang's 1927 German expressionist film, it was like super clear about what I wanted my job to be. It said the mediator between the mind and the hands is the heart. And that is exactly where I feel most, you know, when I'm in thriving in my purpose, is when I am bringing people together. I'm bridging the gaps. I'm allowing folks to have conversations who wouldn't necessarily even give each other the time of the day in the real world. But through music and through art and through storytelling, we get these architects of these experiences. An experience architect is what I like to consider myself. Curating, as we curate these experiences, we bring so many different walks of lives together. And we get an opportunity to use our hearts in ways that we may not have had, you know, to really have a little more compassion for our brothers and sisters. We are a civilization that literally depend on each other for survival. And so I'm always encouraging folks, if you are in a unique position of power, you know, whether you might have more money than someone, your status in the world, how you show up, you just are, doors are opening for you in ways that they're not opening for other folks. You know, consider using it. Consider using your power to help someone who might not be as privileged as you.
To go through this world compassionately. Yeah, I think it is. I think it is compassion that I ultimately get from a lot of your work, strangely.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's...
And I dance, and I dance and smile and have fun. Don't forget that. I do that, too.
Now, that is very important. And that is actually the wave that I'm on right now. I realize I did this sort of retrospective on my life, and I'm timeless, and I still feel like I'm getting started, right?
Yeah.
But I feel like I've spent a significant amount of time living in the future.
Yeah.
Missing out on so many moments because I was thinking about the next moment, the next moment, the next moment. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to be able to write material and music that if I release my first album today, I feel like it would still be right on time. You know, I feel like even with this book with Dirty Computer, you know, I released that album in 2018, but the themes are stronger now than they ever have been. The challenges that we're facing around erasure are more potent than they ever have been. So I appreciate that it can, you know, be some form of healing or a guide for a lot of people that pick it up and use it in their real lives. I love that. But for myself though, I am making up for lost time in a sense where I'm celebrating myself more. I'm celebrating with the people I want to celebrate with more. I'm giving myself permission to have a good time, to take a vacation, you know, to not be so serious. Because what I've learned is like with white supremacy, right? This just rotten way of thinking, with racism, with sexism, with all of these things. They distract you from living your complete and full life. While you're supposed to be on the beach, sipping a glass of wine or making love or falling in love. Here we are taking hours and decades and, you know, and I'm not even, my boots are not even on the ground in the way that some of my Black and brown, you know, folks are fighting, you know, for the queer community, for our trans folks. Like, there are so many people who spend their lives just fighting that they don't even get the opportunity to live.
That's in the book. I felt that in the. Oh, forgive me, Janelle. I don't have the book in front of me. The time
box. Yeah, yeah. It talks about time poverty and what would you do if you could reclaim your time? What would you do?
What would you do?
How would you spend it? I mean, I definitely. I'm traveling around the world. Like I'm vacationing, for sure. Like. I'm going to go see things that I wish I could have seen. You know, my mom and dad could not afford a vacation for us when I was growing up. So I never went on a vacation as an adolescent. I didn't start taking vacations until I became an artist and I was making my own money. So I think for me, I would want to see Earth because you don't get a chance to do the Earth side experience like this again.
I'm trying to think about how I know where we got to go, and I'm trying to think about. I have a bunch of stuff I want to say to you, but I think I want to leave it to you here. Do you want to read something from the book to take us out?
Yeah, I mean, let's see. I would love. It's so much good stuff, and I want to shout out all of my collaborators who I collaborated with. This is so important. This is, I said I wanted to do something that I hadn't seen. I hadn't seen an artist. You know, have an album and a film and, you know, write this sort of book and then invite other artists and writers, you know, to collab. Yeah. I just hadn't seen it. And I want there to be more of this. And so I want to shout out Aliyah Don Johnson, who I collaborated with on The Memory Librarian. Time Box, I did with Evel Ewing. Danny Lohr, I did Nevermind with Danny. I did with Cherie Renee Thomas, we did Time Box Altered. And with Yohanka Delgado, I did Save Changes. And so these, please check out all of their work if you're listening. Just magnificent, you know. And I had just the time of my life working with them and sharpening my own sword as a writer. And so I guess I could read just Breaking Dawn, which is the intro. Introduction to the book.
And this is yours. This is by Janelle Monáe.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It says Breaking Dawn. Oh, and also I have the audio book out. So go to Audible, like listen to it. I spent a significant amount of time reading. And then there was another narrator by the name of Bonnie. Who helped me as well. I'm forgetting Bonnie's last name.
But this is like an audiobook trailer we're going to do right now. This is wild.
Yeah.
This is good. This is innovative stuff right now on the radio.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so listen, let me get my voice together, reading voice. Okay. Yeah. All right, here we go. Breaking Dawn. I am not America's nightmare. I am the American dream. Crazy classic life. Some new dawns are dark, like a silk hood slipped over a nation's head, then choked shut. An eclipse. It started that way. We ushered ourselves into the darkness, so many of us having grown too cool with civic officials and techpreneurs who believed we could be an all-seeing people. And with so many so long fatigued from warring in our homes and abroad, so scared of unforeseen bullet showers and continental storms of smoke, we accepted their offer that an eye in the sky might protect us from ourselves, our world. We already believed in an infinite web, so why not hardwire an eye to each of its strands? A camera on your home, a camera on a phone, a camera on a badge, a camera on a drone, and so on. In time, this new breed of techno-nationalists had to face what the sun had long accepted, that even all their overseeing couldn't keep watch on the whole nation at once. There were things we hid, the warm spectrums we kept alive within ourselves. They were flames, maybe some magic, that we only allowed to burn when or where our light could shine solely before trusted, beloved eyes. And then I'll stop there.
I mean, you don't.
Because I want you guys to read it.
You don't need to read more than that. Janelle, we've been great fans of yours here for a long time. I've been looking forward to talking with you. And I'm so glad I got the chance. And thank you so much for your time.
Oh, this was fantastic. It was my pleasure. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful, lovely day. And remember to be your own memory librarian. Take care.
That's Tom Power's conversation with Janelle Monae. I'm Caitlin Swan. I'm sitting in for Tom Power. That is it for the Q interview today. Be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast. Thanks for listening and have a good one. Later on.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.